RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Elliot Ikele from the Daily Examiner is the spokesperson for Hobson's Pledge. He describes himself as a proud New Zealander with Māori heritage as well as ancestry from Niue, England and Tonga. He's a public speaker, group facilitator, pastoral carer and was the leader of the New Conservative Party. And we've invited Elliot onto the program this morning to talk about that open letter sent to all members of Parliament from more than 400 church leaders urging them to vote down the Treaty Principles Bill. Elliot, welcome to RCR. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Paul. Morena, morena to you, morena to your listeners.
Elliot, what was your reaction to that open letter from more than 400 church leaders urging them to vote down the Treaty Principles Bill? What was your reaction to it?
Well, at first I had a little eye roll, and then I wanted to get into a little bit deeper, so I had a look at what they had actually said, the innards of it, and then I wanted to go further, so I had a look at the names on the list. So for myself, the innards of it, the messaging on it is quite bad. It's actually quite embarrassing. I am a small person in church when it comes to God. You know, I'm no great thing whatsoever. But even I was able to see that this is nearly heretical in what it's writing. It's effectively trying to elevate the Treaty of Waitangi to some form of sacred covenant. And in the Bible, there's seven sacred covenants. So to somehow match it up to that is really bad, really, and I think very heretical.
So how would you explain that from their point of view? They're confused. They've conflated something that obviously shouldn't be conflated, or are they, you know, modifying something? What do you reckon?
I think I'm not sure if I'd go so far as to say they're compromised, but I think they are being more politically aligned to an ideology as opposed to sticking within the parameters of biblical guidelines or the biblical truth of the matter. So when they have used their certain words about their, they're using words like historical, covenant, sacredness, they are, I think that the word is conflated. I think you are right. They are conflating the biblical principles with what we would term as progressive ideology, and especially in terms of our separatist friends who do seek to have different race-based powers. They're more aligning with that than with what should be, with the truth, with keeping with biblical truth and keeping that outside of their political ideology. The names on that list, it reads, now I've only gone through about half of that list, but so far when I've gone back to their websites and back to their own commentary, you will find an interesting set of things. One, you'll find a dearth of evidence that they are engaging in being pro-life, that they are against euthanasia. Some of them we'll talk about a little bit, but not very much. The very much positive elements that they have is they're very much promoting different race-based areas. Some of them are very much about climate alarmism, that fear porn that we see about climatism. And also you'll get some groups who do believe that a woman can have a penis. This is the level of removal from biblical truth that we know, and biological truth in many senses.
It's interesting that list that you just went through. It's difficult these days because some of that our listeners will agree with. They are very skeptical of climate alarmism, the climate crisis. They are very uncomfortable with the transgender ideology. Yet also, I think there's been a revision on freedom of choice, abortion area, you know, legal and rare, more than you can do anything you want. So I guess the point I'm making is that these issues taken as individual things, it's difficult to move them all into sort of group them, you know? It's hard to put them all in one group. So I guess, you know, 400 church leaders who've got a problem with, who are pro-life and anti-euthanasia, I get that. But then it's contradicted by these the acceptability of other things, which is a bit confusing to me, I have to say.
Well, I have to say they're actually being quite hypocritical, you know. And you're right, you know, they are not. Many of them do not stand up for Christian values. They really are empty. I don't see them on the marches for life. I don't see them out there having a public debate about it. I don't see them there. The only time I see some of these names out there is when they're focusing in on the ideological stuff, that different races should have different power structures within New Zealand. And I think that's incredibly racist, and it's very hypocritical for them. The other part as well is that they are trying to suppress the very idea that people can discuss and talk about these things. And what I would regard as the true Christian churches, the true element of what we're about, was always having a society where we can discuss, disagree, and agree, and have a strong discussion. Professor Paul Moon said something yesterday which was absolutely powerful, and that was that the discussions on the Treaty of Waitangi have been happening since 1840. And even before the treaty was signed, in the days and the weeks beforehand, even the chiefs were discussing it before and after. The Kohi Marama Conference was just an example of that. So to try to suppress speech and discourse on this is absolutely extraordinary. And it's so utterly wrong that it goes against even the biblical truths of what we teach.
Yeah. We had Dr. Alistair Rees on yesterday, who's well known for facilitating Māori-Pākehā relations, and he supported the letter. And what he talked about was this lingering hurt that Māoridom has. Now, I don't know if it's across all of Māoridom, but this hurt, and how to get beyond this hurt. And I get that. But hurt can also be used as a bargaining tool, can't it? It can be leveraged. And how do you ever know if the hurt is because of hurt or because it is such an effective bargaining tool? And it seems to me that's a very difficult thing to work out.
Mm. The hurt idea is one that has been used not just in New Zealand. It's been used in the US. It's been used in other parts like Malaysia as well. And the problem with it is it just leads to division. The idea of hurt can be also to sexual abuse survivors. It can be used to those who are the families of suicide people. The idea of hurt has always been there, but I find it to be quite a bigoted perspective to somehow say that because of my grandfather's grandfather, because they went to war, they fought, and they lost over something, then somehow that means that we've got this new idea of generational trauma that somehow gets passed on. That has the policies that have come back from such an ideological position have never helped. And I say never. Probably a good example that we can look at is, for example, the Black Americans or the various Native tribes in the US as well. And every time they try to bring out a policy that somehow gives them more power, more money, outside of different races, it never helps. It has never helped. The only thing that helps is to help our people become equal, treated fairly. And if you want to have an example of that, you have a look at the best place to be a Māori family at the moment is not in New Zealand. It's in Australia, where the families are stronger, the incomes are higher,
point.
And there's no treaty. There's no race-based stuff over there whatsoever. You put in, you get out. And that's what we need to be doing. Treat us the same as equals. Don't try to treat us as if we're some weak, impoverished, mentally incapacitated, frightful type of people. We're strong. We're equal. Treat us such.
The other thing, too, I'll get your comment on, is I don't recall a letter signed by 400 church leaders pushing back against the complete decimation of our human rights 3 years ago, locking down New Zealanders, dobbing them in, gaslighting them, censoring them online, forming a two-tier society. A fully religious person, even Jesus, would have rolled in his, you know what, at that, I am sure. Where were they then?
That's right. Some of the notable names not on that list were brave Christian men and women who did open their doors and said, we don't care what your status is. If you've come to worship the Lord, you come in. If you want to do it, come in, no problem. But you are absolutely right. Many of those people on that list were segregational. They said, no, if you don't have a vaccine passport or if you haven't got this one, you are going to be kicked out. You're being excluded. You're not a part of our worship environment. And that was absolutely disgraceful. In fact, one of those people who signed them actually put out at the time when it was discovered that there was some usage of aborted fetus remains in some of their technology when they were developing some of those vaccines, that particular name on that list, that particular priest put up a list saying, no, it is fine, it is acceptable for Christians to use this particular vaccine, even if they have indeed used physical aborted remains. And I found that disgusting. I really did. And so some of these people where they're putting themselves up as quote-unquote Christian leaders, of which many of them are not even in leadership, they are working against, they're hypocritical, and they're working against biblical ideas that they're supposed to lead.
Is there anything inherently wrong with these three treaty articles or principles that ACT are putting up? New Zealand government has the right to govern all New Zealanders. I think everyone assumed that. The New Zealand government will honour all New Zealanders and the chieftainship of their land and all their property. Well, I think we all understand what that means, whether we're Pākehā or Māori. We have our own nuances, but we know what that means. And all New Zealanders are equal under the law with the same rights and duties. I find it impossible to argue anything different. So what is the big deal, Elliot?
Now, this is where it comes into conjecture and we're doing observations on culture and the cultural principles. I think that when the treaty was first signed, I think it was a good faith document. And yes, there were issues with translations, for sure. That's just normal of every treaty throughout the passage of mankind. The articles, I think, should have been a bit clearer, for sure. But, you know, effectively, you know, the first one saying this is the cost. You cede your sovereignty. That was the cost. It was always a cost. Aparangata observed it. The people at the Kohe Marama conference confirmed it. And so this is what happened there. Then the second one, which is that nuance. What's mine is mine. What's yours is yours. We can trade. We can buy, sell, and we can also talk with the crown if we want to. And then that third one, which I think is the beautiful one, which is we are all to be given the same rights and duties as those of the British Empire. That's a powerful treaty. It's a powerful document. But of course, how it's happening, especially in the 1975 law changes, that is as far as I'm concerned, that's a redefinition of the treaty. Many of the words were never in there. And the debacle that we've had since the 1975 law change has caused very little unity and has furthered the division of people based off race. It's really shocking. And you know, we need to get to a position where we are all treated the same, given the same rights and responsibilities. Now, David has also added in, and I saw this yesterday, that it's going to be that iwi and hapu will be given separate treatment as if it's in other legislation. We fundamentally disagree with that. We think that you need to treat us all the same under one code of laws for us all to be able to move forward together. Iwi tahi tātou does mean we are one people, not one and one B.
We also had Dr. Elizabeth Rata on this program a few days ago, and she was talking about what she called re-tribalism. And that's kind of the push, isn't it, is to re-tribalize. And, you know, do tribal structures actually, can they actually work in the world we're living in right now? Is it possible in any way?
They really can't. And well, what you're seeing is an attempt to go back to a world that was, or a people grouping that was pre-1840, pre the treaty. You see it in the way in which they're trying to develop their tribal affiliation, their organizations, yet at the same time, they're trying to gain resources from the what we call the current world. And anyone who's a student of history can see that the Treaty of Waitangi and especially that Christian impact on it did so much. We ceased cannibalism. People still think that cannibalism was only a small deal in Māoridom. It was not. It was massive. It was brutal, and it was brutal to our own people, various iwi intertribal war. The musket wars, the abuse that we're having against each other, the fact that women were treated like chattel in some areas and were given a little bit of respect in other areas where women were really low and took the abuse. Christianity and the treaty worked together to actually bring all of these into a more cohesive unit where we got rid of those bad, horrific examples. We don't want to go back there. And the tribes or the elitist tribes who are attempting to do this, I suspect that what they'll find out if they manage to succeed in it is they're going to go straight back to the days of Utu, revenge, vengeance, warfare, and it won't be the same. It won't be muskets, but it'll be law, courts, and who's going to pay? The Kiwi. The Kiwi businesses, the Kiwi men and women, and those of our people, of our Māori people, who are at the bottom. They are the ones who are going to suffer through it, not the elitists, not the academics.
The question of the charitable status of some of these, the churches represented by these church leaders, I wonder if you have a view on this. So if you're going to venture into a political space, and that's what's happened here, right? I mean, that's fundamentally what's happened. I think there are certain rules and regulations for operating charities. And once you cross that line, is charity status still appropriate? I mean, political parties aren't charities, are they?
No, that becomes a little bit more messy, and in a good way messy, because if I look at one who got kicked off was Family First. Now, Family First, many of the issues that we deal with do become political. So those who are looking after the poor and the destitute, the prostitutes, that becomes naturally a political situation. So in these ones, Salvation Army, when they released their housing report and their strategy report, these are fair, and I think they should be charities because they are educating, and which is one of the rules of the charity games. You've got to be educating the public and being aware of it. These are fine. I think where you become, it's a fine line, because I think even as these quote-unquote leaders, so-called leaders, are putting their view out, it is wrong, it is harmful, I would regard it as racist and even potentially heretical. Their organizations themselves, I would say, are still coming in under the rules and of those situations. I mean, St. Matthew in the City, good example. I cannot say they are not Christian as far as I'm concerned. They're progressive Christians, so they think that women can have penises. They believe in men accessing toilets and bathrooms, all that. But it is still an organization that still engages within the framework of what a charity is.
Yeah, but they're not trying to influence what could be a major and consequential outcome, which could be some kind of line in the sand for a nation.
You've got a validity there, but I think that gets a bit grey, because the Sensible Sentencing Trust, for example, they looked after the victims and the survivors of brutal murders, and they were able to get through that three strikes law through ACT. Now, that doesn't mean that they themselves were engaging. They were naturally in a political space. So it does get grey, and that's where you have to be careful about it. It's like free speech. You have to be careful. You have to allow that free speech element that they can have. It's disgusting that they're calling to try to suppress down, and I think they should be absolutely shouted down themselves for it. But I'm happy for them to be able to speak up that we should not have this discussion, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense, and I think we all agree with that. Might not like what you say, and this is not a personal opinion or position for me, but what's the old saying? Might not like what you say, but I'll defend to the death.
Defend your right to say it.
To say it, and I would, actually. I bloody well would, and I'm sure you would too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Elliot, from what you've seen, is anyone else lined up behind this letter?
So this was hilarious. The political parties who have absolutely praised these so-called church leaders for saying what they've said is the Labour Party and the Green Party. Now, these are the two parties. The Labour Party erased the name of Jesus from Parliament. They're very well known for taking anti-Christian positions on policies. And you've also got the Greens. And the Greens have, to their credit, not even try to hide the fact that they have a deep contempt and disdain for Christianities. So the fact that these two parties are the ones who are praising these leaders for what they've said, I find that indicative and very illuminating to themselves.
Okay, interesting development, Elliot. Thank you for coming on and commenting on it. We appreciate that.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Anytime.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.